Hello, everybody. It's another Tuesday down here in sunny Texas for a change. In any event, I wanted to welcome you once again. If you missed us last week, we did do a rerun. We had a few little hiccups technically, like no internet connection, that went down a few minutes before airtime. So, in any event, we are back, and I am really excited about the show today. And I'll tell you why. As a genealogist, over these many years, I have felt so much energy that comes from people's ancestors, including my own, when I'm doing research. And, you know, one of the things as a professional researcher that I have found over these many, many years is that so many things that we carry around with us in our day-to-day lives really comes from some of the, I'm going to say baggage, because there are some good things too, but there are the negative things and the bad things sometimes we carry around that bother us for most part of our lives, really comes from some of the things that we carry from our ancestors, and, you know, also some of the things that we carry from our past lives. So I thought it would really be wonderful to have probably one of the leaders in past life regression, and that's Dr. Roger Woolger, and he's out of England originally, but he is a Jungian analyst, a regression therapist, and really probably one of the leading professional lecturers in the world on this subject. He has a degree in religion, philosophy, and psychology at from Oxford and London universities. And he's written several books, and they're on our website. They're The Other Lives, Other Selves, Eternal Return. And probably one of the things that we're going to delve into a lot today, and we will be taking your calls, is on his deep memory process. So, Roger, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Susan. Pleasure to be here.
We are really excited about having you. You know, one of the things I think as a genealogist, and maybe you can give this some thought, is I had a guest on the show not too long ago, and she had asked me, you know, just off the top of her head, if I believed in reincarnation, and my first gut reaction was, yes, I do. And then she says, well, as a genealogist, you know, how does that work? And I couldn't answer her, and I got off the phone, and I started thinking about it, and you know, it really was kind of confusing as a genealogist that, you know, we have, one soul, many lives. And as a genealogist, I'm working one life and a soul. So you might want to give that some thought, unless you have some immediate answers on, you know, really how do we deal with this? It kind of goes a little bit further than what I had ever thought to even think about, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, we do all, I believe in reincarnation, so I believe in past lives. And, you know, and I also believe, too, that, you know, the past life regressions are some of the most important things that we can do to heal ourselves in this life. So, with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about some of the processes that you use, I think, that are just very unique and really very helpful to individuals. And let me do this, too, before we get into that, is let me give out the number, toll-free, worldwide, and that's 1-888-815-9756. If you have any questions for Dr. Woolger or Roger, please feel free to call in. We will kind of have about a 10, 15, 20-minute discussion before we get into the call. So with that in mind, deep memory process.
So, Susan, I think the first thing I would say is that most of the work that has been done on ancestry and genetic transmission is in the scientific biological area. And when we move to past lives, we move to another dimension where research is extremely difficult. We can't exactly locate things like genetic and past life memory easily in the brain. Ancestral memory, up to a point, we can show transmission of blood types. We can show, to a degree, personality and temperamental types, and depression and schizophrenia is passed down in generations. But even then, the correspondences at the genetic level are very, very crude still. If you're talking about the transmission of past life memories, you're talking about something that will never actually, I believe, be solved genetically, because it's not a genetic issue. That the soul transmits itself in a quite different way from in a biological transmission. Bodies come back, but they receive connections with different aspects of a higher reality, which we call soul. I don't even call it the soul. I think there's just soul. There's a huge, vast pool of human experience out there somewhere, like a, you know, a cosmic internet. And when an individual is born, they have a piece of that collective, huge memory. In India, and later in Theosophy, Madame Blavatsky called this huge memory the Akasha, the universal memory. And there's no question in my mind, from seeing thousands of regressions over the years, that people can tap into this memory. Now, whether that's an incarnation from another lifetime or just tapping into this memory, I simply still cannot say after 20 years of doing this work. And I'm just as skeptical about reincarnation as a process as I was 20 years ago. What I do know is that we do have access to huge numbers of memories from people who have died in the past. Is that tuning into the psychic internet, or are they personally my memories? That's a question I don't know the answer to. So I'm just throwing out the two points of view that are useful. What's your feeling?
That makes a lot more sense to me than what I was, I think, where I was going, because, when people start, and this is an interesting thing, is that I have heard, and I haven't done studies on it yet, but I know that from my own personal experience and from experience that I've heard from other people, that, you know, when I started doing genealogy at first, I started having some strange occurrences happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were physical or psychological or whatever. I mean, I had, within probably a month or two of starting my own genealogy, I started having panic attacks.
Mm.
And I had absolutely no idea where they came from. And the doctors had absolutely no idea where they came from. And over a period of time, they disappeared and went away, and I haven't had one since. And I really have begun to think that there might have been some correlation my getting involved in studying my ancestral lines that may have caused something like that. And other people have had some things that have happened to them that I think...
I think there's no question. When you start investigating your ancestors, when you get out the photograph album, when you go to the registry and look up lineages, you are putting a message out psychically that I want to know about my ancestors. Now, in every other culture but the Western culture, we are so backward when it comes to ancestors. Every other culture would say, why don't you just sit down, get a photograph or light a candle and talk to your ancestors? They will come immediately. And then in cultures like Bali, which I visited once, or even, you know, modern China, you'll find in homes little shrines to the ancestors, little pictures or statues or things that remind them of the ancestors. And they pray to those ancestors, say, will you protect our family? Will you be here for us? Often people find those ancestors will come in their dreams. Now, we've done workshops with ancestors as well as past lives, and we simply invite the ancestors to come. We draw a family tree, and we say, if anyone's got a story or wants to talk to us, we're available. And immediately people start getting funny feelings, shivers, they get images, they get feelings. It's like you can't invite the ancestors, because in the old-fashioned, the non-Western way, ancestors are simply spirits who inhabit an invisible reality, but are, in a sense, they're around us all the time. They can be called. Shamans and medicine people of tribal cultures know this, you see. We think we're so clever scientifically today, we've actually forgotten a lot of very, very useful knowledge. And contact with the ancestors is fundamental to many, many cultures. And what I think is going on is we're just learning again to contact the ancestors in our culture. And I've had similar experiences like that. The first time I started doing a workshop about ancestors, I remember I'm giving a lecture, and I start to get very, very sleepy in the lecture. And it's not like me to get sleepy in the middle of my own lectures. I like my voice far too much. So when it was over, I just managed to pull myself together, and I said to a colleague, what did you see going on? She said, well, there was something with you. There's some energy around you that was pulling you into something and distracting you as you were talking about grandparents. I said, really? Well, would you sit with me? And so she sat with me and helped me through. And I went into this dizzy, empty space. And suddenly, I got a vision of the trenches in the Second World War, of the First World War, sorry, that terrible war in France, where, in fact, my grandfather had died. And I knew nothing about it. And then I got a voice saying, I want you to know that I couldn't come home. And it was the spirit of my grandfather talking to me, and he'd been gassed, it seemed. And what I was picking up when I got very dizzy like that was his memory of gassing that came through. It's like I was channeling just very briefly. And
right.
He talked, and he said, I was so sorry. Please tell your father that I never got to see him. Well, my father's already dead. So I said, well, I can't really do that. You've got to talk to him up there because he's not on the earth anymore. And that was the beginning of realizing, that developed into a whole style of work we have, that we can actually imagine talking to our ancestors, and they will answer back. And after a while, I began to realize this isn't just imagination. Something else is going on. Because
right.
we got information, we got names, we got stories about lost ancestors, people have gone overseas, people have been locked up, people have died in concentration camps, all kinds of stories that nobody knew consciously. And yet, when you did this process of talking to them, they told you secrets, and they told you things that had long been forgotten by the family. And it was like it was a great relief to tell them. And it's beginning to feel like thus, if you can free the ancestors of their heavy, heavy memories, whether it's wars, deportation, starvation, we just did this kind of work in Ireland recently, or I do a lot of this work in Brazil, family memories of slavery and abuse of slaves. These memories, these family memories, are like clouds. They hang around the family, and every so often a weaker memory or someone, a member of the family who's more sensitive, starts to get nightmares, starts to get strange illnesses, starts to find difficulties in their relationships or their businesses all collapse. And this is all influence from the ancestors we found. They're replaying their unfinished stuff through us, through this sort of cloud of memory, I call it. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes perfect sense, because it wasn't long after I had the panic attacks that that particular business ended up folding, because the pattern that you just described is something that I can, certainly address. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, now that I've taken on, caseloads as a professional genealogist,
yep.
You know, I am finding, day in and day out that, I am receiving, a lot of information from, my clients' ancestors. I had a case, and this one I think you'd really enjoy, and obviously I cannot mention names, but I had a case, a man who's in his mid to late 60s, and he had contacted me. And his first question to me, he says, let me ask you a question. Are you a genealogist or are you a healer? And I said, well, I am a genealogist, but I believe in the power of healing through, doing ancestral work.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, so the cases he had given it to me was very benign. And it basically, outlined that he was looking for his mother, and his mother died at this age and so forth. And when I accepted the project, I said, okay, now, just send me any information, any stories that you might have that might, shed some light on this. Well, what I got back sent shivers up my spine. And
mm-hmm.
I want to tell you that it was so compelling that
mm-hmm.
the answers I got in a matter of less than an hour. But it turned out that his mother had committed suicide, which he did not know. And it turns out that he had two siblings, older siblings, that died very by accidents within 15 months of each other, and that the suicide happened within 6 weeks of his birth, and that it appeared that he was probably going to be next, and she decided to take her own life. And this happened up in New York. I'm in Texas. I want you to know that the Texas papers had an article on it and online in the archives that actually gave the names of these two children, which he did not know. And it was amazing. It was chilling for me. But what is even more exciting is that, you know, he was able to visit their graves just last week. And we've actually been able to make contact with his mother's brother's family, who he had no contact with since he was a very young child. And he's getting together with them this week. So,
wow.
He has definitely said to me that it has been a real healing process for him. And it's interesting because, you know, so many people, I think, don't want to get into doing their genealogy because there are stories of these kind of situations, and they don't want to know. And, you know, I think the real key to this is knowing the truth is where the healing power really takes place.
Or if not, there's that chilling saying by an American philosopher, Santayana, who says, "Those who do not want to remember the past are forced to relive it." If we don't remember what our ancestors have done, right or wrong, the good stuff is fine, of course. But the bad stuff, if we don't clear it somehow and help the ancestors rest, they're just going to come back to haunt us. This is what one of my great teachers, who I recommend to you, is an African shaman who works with the ancestors, Maladoma Somme. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's called Of Water and the Spirit. It's his autobiography of a shaman who grew up in West Africa. And he came to first Britain, and France, sorry, and then America. And he's been teaching his tribal ways to contact and work with the ancestors. Many of them are very practical. But he says that you Westerners, you have so much guilt in your history of going into other countries, destroying all the Native American and other indigenous peoples, stealing, robbing. You've got some very guilty history in your past. And we tribal people see this probably better than you do. But when we look at you, we see a lot of guilt and shame, and no wonder you don't want to look into your past, because we tend to cover up the rotten side of history and glorify, you know, the wonderful things we brought to other cultures, when in fact we were robbing and stealing and committing a lot of genocide, and that's one of the blocks. This comes up a lot in past lives. People have to look at some very dark past lives that particularly Western cultures indulge in, but not just. All cultures have dark histories, but if you don't want to see that, if you have an ideal picture of your culture, you're not going to get in touch with ancestors or past lives, because you've got to accept some of the dark stuff with the good. They're both there, dark and light, but there's some tough stuff to look at first.
Absolutely, and you know, you mentioned something earlier too, that I really kind of latched on to. And that is that ancient cultures really were more in tune to not only ancestors, but spirit. And, you know, through the years and through organized religion, some of these spiritual things that you know, go back to very ancient times. I mean, I spent some time at Delphi and all those places that you know, truly, you know, I think that the times are such, and I think where we're heading is that people are starting to come back to full circle to where we were back then, where we are in touch with spirit. We are in touch with our ancestors. And I think that the healing of this planet, and I mean everybody talks about, you know, 2012, is going to take place because of this return both to spirit and both to ancestors. And I think that, as you said, this is why the, this is, where genealogy and spirit connect is really the focus of trying to bring both of these concepts, back to one place for not only personal healing of us, but healing of the whole planet. And truly, I believe that the more and more we get involved in genealogy, and our younger generations get involved in genealogy learning about their ancestors, that we may have an opportunity for peace and an opportunity to build understanding and tolerance in the world. And I guess that's my message, broadly speaking. But I am a genealogist. I mean, I've been, in doing this now for almost 30 years, and I can see how it affects people's lives. I can see how knowing can change how a person thinks, and what you do with your deep memory process is explain that to me and the audience a little bit, because I think that that's something that would really be a very helpful tool for all of us to get involved in, so that we can all move forward into where we need to be going over the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah. Well, to my mind, there are two types of psychic inheritance, that is, non-physical inheritance. It doesn't necessarily come through the genes. There is ancestral memory, which probably at some level is genetic, but also at a spiritual level is much broader and taps into broader energy fields that we are surrounded by all our life. We don't see them. We're in tune with them. And there's another type of memory which comes from other lifetimes, when somehow we've been connected with different cultures and we're not part of a physical ancestral lineage on the earth. There is a higher stream which jumps around from different cultures, which isn't connected biologically. We call that the past life or the karmic stream. And they're like two strands of DNA. They interweave with each other, so that sometimes when remembering a past life, the ancestors turn up and say, hey, we were involved in that too. I'll give you an example. A woman comes to therapy a few years ago in London, and she's been depressed for several years. And she admits in the interview that she was depressed on and off in childhood, but not as badly as recent few years. So I asked her about how did it start recently. How did the recent bout of depression start? And she said, well, it was about 5 years ago. And I said, okay, what was going on? I was looking for something that provoked it. Something happened in her life, a tragedy or something. I said, did anyone die? Was there any major loss in your life? No, nothing like that. She said, well, my husband changed his job. Let me think. We moved one part of London to another. Wasn't a big deal. We got the house redone and da 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 da. Oh, my son went away to college. I did this. I said, wait a minute. Your son went away to college. Now, everyone has children who grow up and go to college and go away from home. And sometimes mother particularly goes through a bit of sadness when they go.
Right.
But she was talking about much bigger, something much worse than that. I said, well, what about your son going away? She said, well, it wasn't any difficulty. He came home for Christmas and we saw him. He was only just up in Manchester, not so far north. I said, wait a minute. And my intuition was saying there's something more going on here. Just close your eyes, and this is the process. Go back in your memory to the day your son left home and went away to Manchester. What are you doing? She said, oh, well, we're putting his baggage in the car. We're driving to Paddington railway station. I'm parking the car. We're getting in. I'm putting him on the train. How do you feel? It's great. He's very excited. He's starting a whole new thing. And he's leaning out of the window, and he's saying goodbye, and the train starts to move. And then she kind of takes a gulp and And she swallows it. Just the train's moving out. I'm saying, bye, dear. See you at Christmas. Over in your... I said, wait a minute. I want you to go back to that gulp.
Go back to that gulp.
It happens exactly as the train starts to move.
Right.
I said, stay with that moment. I said, what's happening? She said, she starts breathing in her chest. And tears start to come. I said, what are you thinking at this moment? She was suppressing something, you see. She said,
yes.
The thought comes, oh my God, I'm never going to see him again. And then more tears start coming. I'm never going to see him again. But my head says, of course I'll see him again. He'll be home at Christmas. I said, stay with the irrational, not what your head says, what your feelings say, because they're connected to deeper memories. Okay, keep repeating that phrase, I'll never see him again, I'll never see him again, and see where it takes you. Just free associate, that's what Freud called it, free associate. Let images come like a dream. And in no time at all, she said, I'm dressed in black, I've got a suitcase, and I'm with my son, and he's small. And she starts crying and crying and crying. We're having to get off this train, she said, but it's not a regular train, it's a cattle truck.
Right.
She's among the Jews in Nazi Germany, and hundreds of them are being deported and pulled off this train. That was the trigger, of course, the train. And I said, what happens next? She says, they're marching us and they're putting us in groups. And she says, oh my God, they're putting the children in different groups. And that was it.
Right.
The children have marched off in one direction. She's marched off in another direction. She never sees her son again. So this is the story in her deeper memory, her unconscious mind, her soul memory, maybe her ancestral memory, but she wasn't directly connected to anyone who had been in Germany that generation. She goes through the story, a typical regression. We have to finish the story and see how it ends. Well, it ends tragically in the gas chambers.
Right.
In the gas chambers. She dies in a state of terrible despair. She's lost her husband. The Nazis have already shot him. And she's lost her son and the rest of the family she doesn't know about. So the beauty of this work is that in regression memory, DMP, it doesn't happen in any other therapy, you remember what it is like to die. And it's what some people have discovered in hospitals when they had a near-death experience. It isn't an end, it's merely a transition. You leave the body, and consciousness goes somewhere above the body. But it doesn't just float off into the light, into a blissful, happy ending. Because if there have been miserable deaths like this concentration camp one, battlefield deaths, earthquakes, fires, tragedies, if you died violently or suddenly, the soul is in shock at the moment of death, and it can't move on to the higher realms. And it stays kind of stuck around the earth. So I said to her, where are you now you've left your body? She said, I'm in this cloud. I'm in this heavy, heavy cloud. And we're all miserable. We're all sad. I said, what is this cloud? She says, it's hundreds of others who've been gassed. It's the spirits. She didn't use the word, but that's what she meant.
Right.
It's those who have also died in the gassings. There were masses of Jewish souls hovering around the concentration, this particular camp, in this huge cloud. So I said, okay, we're going to do something about this. And this, in our process, is where we introduce things we've learned from the shamans and from spiritual cultures, and from some of the spiritualists, too, who do very good work, particularly in Brazil, where I work a lot with Brazilian mediums. And we said, I want you to look out of the cloud, look up to another realm. What do you see higher up? She said, oh, it's light up there. Yes, it's light up there, because that's the place of freedom. And the rest of your ancestors are probably up there. So who did you know on the earth who was a nice grandfather or grandmother? Oh, Auntie so-and-so, she thought of. Let's call Auntie so-and-so from the spirit world. And it looked very quickly, she gets an image of, there she is, there's my aunt, just as I remember her. And she's smiling, and she's calling to me. She says, you can come now. And the spirit of the woman from the camp starts to feel a little relieved. She said, but what about my son? Okay, so we don't let her leave immediately. Look around and see if your son is in this mass. She calls to the sun, and the spirit of the sun is there. And he comes, and they hug, and they're reunited. So I said, you better call and see if there's any other family members there. And she calls, and several family members have also died in the Holocaust are there. And when the family are reunited, they go off into the higher realm with this lovely auntie figure from the grandmother, the grandfather realm. And they reunite with the ancestors. And I said, but before you go, just tell all these hundreds of souls here that it's over, because this is where it's a collective ancestral problem, not her personally. But
right.
Jewish people, there was a mass of unhappy spirits. And what happened was, as when we told them they could leave, their ancestors appeared from the higher realms, and hundreds of them came to pull them up. So we were doing an ancestral clearing, not just for this woman, but for many, many families as well. And they left, and the atmosphere was a lot lighter. And she just felt totally different after this session. The depression left. And what we realized, she was carrying not only her own past life depression, her own Jewish ancestral depression, but the depressions of a lot of the Jewish race that she's
right.
connected to racially, you see. Because we're all, at a deeper level, we're all connected. And that is absolutely true on the spirit level. We're connected to many groups. And what we're finding is the more we work at this level, we can help whole groups of souls move on and be released. So that's an example of two aspects of the work.
Well, I can really relate to that. I don't know if you know, because I probably didn't mention it, but I spent 23 years of my life as the founder of Jewish Gen, which is the internet source for those researching their Jewish families.
Oh, wow.
And spent many, many years and have traveled to, you know, many spots in Eastern Europe and to many, many killing fields. And, you know, so that was, you know, a big part of my life up to about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
But a year before that, I had a near-death experience. So...
Oh.
This may put into perspective where I'm heading and why I'm heading in this direction. Because, you know, I remember, my near-death experience, you know, at the time that it was happening, I knew something was wrong. And but I was at total peace. There was absolutely no fear, no nothing. Every once in a while, I try to put myself back into that place, because it was really quite wonderful. Even though I knew that something was wrong, and you know, they rushed me back into surgery, and everything is fine, and it's a happy story. But these types of things, do, whether it's your life or someone before you's life, it stays with you, and it's life changing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Definitely life-changing. You know, one of the other things I'd like to talk about, too, I know that I was watching Larry King Live not too long ago, and he had Chris Brown, I think, and Rihanna. But he was talking about, you know, the abusive situation that happened with Rihanna. And Mark Aragos, I guess the attorney at that point, had made a comment, and he said that, which I just... thought was profound. He said that, you know, when they run into cases where there's abusive relationships like this, that it's generational. So, you know, these are the kinds of ancestral patterns, I think, that you also address. And I mean, I think that there are people that have, you know, financial issues that seem to be compounded generation to generation to generation. I mean, there are all kinds of things that we carry forth that we, we know that this isn't us, but we seem to carry it. My mother was adopted, and, you know, she felt abandoned all her life, and I can tell you that there are some situations from time to time where I feel like I have her abandonment issue.
Yeah,
I wasn't abandoned.
No, if it's not made conscious or released before anybody dies, it gets passed on in the unconscious to the next generation or generations. It stays around us. And sounds like her fear of loneliness and abandonment is still around. It's like an energy around you. It's her old memories even that are probably in the background. What you could do is you could sit down and imagine a conversation with her and ask her, Mother, do you still feel unhappy about your childhood? And see if you can find someone that she can meet up there who would be more comforting. Because she's still, as it were, stuck in her memories, probably, that's causing these feelings to hang around. That's what we find. It's, unfortunately, the state after death is not one of great clarity. Often it's a state of confusion. This is what the Tibetans say. The Tibetans have this wonderful Tibetan Book of the Dead. And they say that unless you really clear things with a person dying, they will take their gripes and worries with them. And they will hang around the family, troubling one of the more sensitive members with the same issue, or wanting help in some way. I had a very funny example of this. A client of mine had helped her mother die of a painful cancer about a year earlier, and she thought she was through with it, and it was difficult, but she was very, very good to her mother in those last days. And she came to a session one morning, and she came in, she said, well, something very funny happened as I walked through the, as I got out of my car, my shoulder started to hurt very badly. And I said, do you have shoulder pains normally? She said, no, I've never had a shoulder pain like this. I said, do you know anyone who has shoulder pains? She said, oh my God, my mother, she had terrible shoulder pain, same shoulder, the right shoulder. So I said, okay, I think your mother's with us. Close your eyes, focus on your shoulder, and see what comes. And she said, oh, it's my mother, she's here, obviously. I said, how does she appear to you? How do you imagine her? She said, oh, she's very angry. Let's talk to her. Mother, what are you angry about? I'm very angry about Harry. I said, so who's Harry? Oh, that's how she called her husband. He's still alive, her client's father, still alive. Why are you angry at Harry, Mother? Well, he's with that woman. I knew he'd be that with that woman. He was always chasing women, and he's doing it now. See? Harry had been waiting, apparently, to have an affair with his secretary till his wife died. She knew
oh my
it,
God.
She saw it, and her spirit was so angry after death, it couldn't leave. So I said, well, if you're angry at Harry, the obvious question, why don't you go and tell him? And he said, he won't listen. I've tried. I've been there, but my daughter assures us. It was absolutely hilarious, but also very, very sad. Because she died unhappy, and she couldn't move on to other planes because she's still full of this anger. So what I've learned to do with this, if this happens in therapy, I did a little therapy with Mother's spirit. I said, okay, Mother, tell me about your anger. Tell me about the marriage. And she went on for a while, and, oh, he did this and he did that. And she said, well, I was always unhappy, and no one ever stayed with me very long. I was always being let down or abandoned. It was a lifetime pattern. So I said, let's go back to the origin of it. In fact, what I said, go back to the origin of your cancer. This was very interesting. I said, go uh-huh. back to when your cancer began. Because in spirit, you can see things more clearly than when you're in the body. And she said, oh, this is the mother spirit. She said, I'm sitting on my father's knee. I'm about 4, and I want to cuddle him. And he won't. He pushes me away.
Oh.
That's when the disappointment set in. And she managed to choose men who always rejected her throughout her life. Not a lot, but the husband was the chief one. She repeated that father rejection over and over again until the hurt became so deep it became a tumor. That's what she died with. And she saw that she'd been carrying all that bitterness in the tumor and that she's still angry with her father and still angry. So we did some therapy, said, okay, tell him what you think, get it out. She expressed it. She said, oh, I feel a lot better now. And off she went.
Well, you know, and that does come up to, you know, this whole concept of, you know, illness and disease being
Indeed.
Really dis-ease. And
Absolutely.
And
Indeed.
The more that we as human beings living in this lifetime, you know, don't deal with some of these issues that we end up. And my mother died of cancer too. And you know, I remember what was going on in her life when she got sick, and it was discomfort. It was being ostracized a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, and unjustly so.
Yes.
And it was the pain that she went through during those years that I ate her up.
Yep.
It ate her up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really behooves all of us, you know, to really deal with these things. And as you say, they come from really the study of our ancestors, whether they're direct or not direct. I mean, some of these things could pass on, could stay from several generations back.
Absolutely. No, I had a case of a woman who's having business difficulties. She's a very competent businesswoman. She ran two or three businesses, but they'd always somehow gone wrong. And they'd gone wrong because of people she employed who weren't honest, people stole from the firm, bad contracts, and so on. And she began to feel she was sort of cursed in business. And she ended up in therapy with me, and she said, "I don't know if you can help me, but what do I do about this?" And I said, let's go back in the ancestor line and see who's with you." And before long, using some techniques I use, her great-grandfather turned up, great-great, I think, way back in the late 19th century. And he appeared to her, in her imagination, hanging his head in shame and wringing his hands. "Said, Grandfather, you don't look very happy." And he said, "No, I'm very, very unhappy. And I did something very bad in my life. And I want to let you know because I'm suffering so much." He said, "Well, what did you do?" Well, apparently he had started a quite big factory somewhere in Pennsylvania or somewhere. And it had done very well. And he had a partnership with several other men. But he wasn't making enough money for himself with the partnership, and he wanted more for himself and his family, and he started stealing money from the firm, embezzling. And he did that for many years, and he basically got away with it, and no one ever caught him, and they punished or blamed someone else or something. But he had died feeling very guilty, and he felt that the money that had been passed on through his family, that his children inherited, was tainted, and it was that guilt which was, in fact, it had transmitted itself four generations, it seemed, three or four, I forget what exactly, to his granddaughter, who could not get this business to work. Like, the family curse was there. So he had to, in the spirit world, symbolically give back a lot of money and apologize to everyone he'd deceived. There was a sort of ritual of forgiveness went on, and he seemed a lot better. And then the daughter realized that she didn't have to carry his stuff anymore. You know, I mean, it's in Hamlet, isn't it? Hamlet comes in and says, "I'm miserable, I'm depressed." And then he discovers it's not his problem, it's his father's problem he's got, because his father has been murdered, and nobody knows. So there's, again, a guilty secret hanging around the family psyche that he has to set right. We come in with, I mean, when I do workshops, I get people to fill in a list of all the possible things that could have gone wrong in your family. It's a grim list, you know. People died, people went to war, people died in childbirth, people were imprisoned, people went to jail for this, that, and the other, people emigrated. All these things happen in families. There's a lot of family tragedies, alcohol, drugs, sexual problems. I mean, we like to think of ourselves today as very respectable, but you only have to go back three or four generations when the frontier west was very wild, and you might find out that your grandmother, in fact, worked in a bar, was a prostitute, for example.
Right.
Or you may find, if you go back in your European heritage, that your father, your great-great-grandfather was working for the black market with the Nazis or something. And these are covered up. These are shameful things. We don't talk about these. But they don't go away because these family members want to be recognized. They want to be heard. And they'll keep pestering someone in the family in a sort of dreamlike way until they get the picture and things But of course, we just get it as a behavior, not as an actual consciousness. We start behaving peculiarly. We have a compulsion to drink or smoke. And it's an ancestor who's unfinished, who's around. Very interesting. When you start thinking this way, it's very powerful.
It is. And I know that I've been actually amazed over the last, I started the show back in April, I think, and I've actually been amazed at, the number of people who have really kind of embraced the concept. I think at first they thought I was lost my marbles.
Yeah.
and where was I going with this? But the more and more caseloads I take on, the more it just shows itself, on day in and day out. And, one of the things that I have found is that, when I sit down and I start talking to these people, all right, yes, I'm nuts, they tell me things and I can go right to where I need to go to find detail the information. And granted, there's sometimes where the records do not exist, and you can only conjecture what you think, then you have to search based on what your conjecture might be based on what it is you're feeling, sensing, when you're working with people. And I really believe that the more attached that we become to, the people that we're working with in genealogy. And I remember I had one guest not too long ago, said that there were a whole bunch of them at a conference talking about going to cemeteries and, walking in the cemeteries and just not being able to find who they were looking for. And, they started talking about how they just, will stand there and close their eyes and call out their names and miraculously, they walk right to the grave.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a situation where I didn't walk to the grave. I fell on it. I tripped, and I actually fell on the grave that I was looking for 2 hours. But, it is a very interesting thing, and they want you to find them.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And
they're so glad that you asked the question, you see, that because they're being acknowledged. And then their energy is woken up, and little things, we call them synchronicities in my psychology, start to happen just to show you're on the right track, for example.
It really is. It really is amazing. I have failed to give out the number again. If there's anybody out there that would like to give us a call, it's 888-815-9756. We have about 10 minutes left. So, going back to, in past shows and a little bit of research I've done on this, Roger, I've learned about spiritual DNA, cellular memory, as well as the physical DNA. And you addressed this a little bit at the beginning, but, I seem to get confused sometimes with the difference between spiritual DNA and cellular memory.
they're both imaginary concepts. There is absolutely no scientific basis for either of them, but they're ways in which people, because I've researched this, they're ways in which people like to understand that there is a scientific explanation for this. Unfortunately, for spiritual matters, you have to have spiritual explanations, but they're not scientific. They belong to a different order. But people like to think that our cells can remember everything, or our brains can remember everything. I think there's something much bigger going on, and it's what I call the universal memory, the world soul, the Akasha. There have been words, but our culture is, whilst there have been a revival of a lot of spiritual traditions in recent times, we're still very impoverished compared to, say, 2,000 years ago when Jesus walked the earth, or the time of the Buddha or Lao Tse. They had much richer spiritual understandings than we do. So the teachings about reincarnation, the movements of the soul, have largely been lost in the West because we've become too materialist. But they're coming back slowly, and these concepts are attempts to explain phenomena that, in fact, have always been known. I mean, the immortality of the soul, the universality of the soul, is a given in many, many cultures. When you tune into it through meditation, through hypnosis, or just through intention, you start making connections. because you're tuning in to a much greater mind, if you like, or a much greater energy field. And it's not in our bodies, it's out there, like the internet is sort of out there. It resonates with things in our bodies, certainly. Some people can, you know, pick up things through their stomach or their chest. Some people touch objects. But the actual information is on a higher vibrational order. It's not actually in the body anywhere. It's not. I don't think what we're talking about is just genetic. It's something bigger. But if you're not used to thinking that way, it's a bit difficult. But when you connect to the what I call the universal field, then knowledge is available to you anywhere on the earth. It doesn't matter where you are. We know from dowsing that if a person wants their land doused, you can write to someone in another country, and he'll just take out a map and a pendulum, and he'll hang the pendulum over the map and show on the map exactly where the water is on your land. Now, how does he do that without visiting the land? He does it because he tunes into the universal field, and the image of the farm's configuration and where it is helps him to contact that field, just like the internet, and he's immediately there. I believe we need to think much more in terms of energy fields that cover the earth, and like web patterns. We're all connected to each other much more than we realize. And it's not just through the physical, it's through this high vibrational level. So that's how I'm approaching it.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Roger, because, you know, maybe the whole concept of the World Wide Web that's come about over the last decade has been the precursor to really bring us all back to where we need to be. It may be one of the bigger mediums of really bringing the world back to our back to basics here, and we never really thought of that like that.
I think you're absolutely right, and I didn't
think about it until just now. Actually,
we've been given these things of metaphors to teach us our higher and deeper potential, because I think we all have the potential to be telepathic and to tune in to these other realities. It's just that we haven't practiced it very much in our culture. And it's, in some ways, the internet is teaching us the idea. It's like a teaching tool out there. And I believe we all have something called a soul, which is out there, which is a very, very complex thing, which is tuned into all times of history and all levels of reality. But we have to, you know, tune in, just have to open our website first. We have to contact the soul. When we're in soul consciousness, this is what I teach people in workshops, then we can pretty much go anywhere. We can go back to Roman times. We can go back to Celtic times. We can go back to the creation of the planet if we want to, because we're in touch with universal memory, because our personal web address is an entry into this vast cosmic psychic field. And it's all there. It's amazing what comes up when you work this way. So I think it's a great concept.
It really is. And, I mean, it you know, I guess when you look back, and maybe we ought to all go back and read Marshall McLuhan again and see, you know, we took his message to mean television back in the 60s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Problems.
Where we have come full cycle. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I was not sure whether my connection here was about to close down or not.
Okay, well, we're still here, but we are probably about ready to close out the show. So it's been really quite a pleasure. And at least I feel like I'm not crazy anymore.
Good. Join the club.
Join the club.
I always think I'm a bit crazy, but I know enough people who think like me that I'm don't take it so seriously.
Well, I think, you know, in some respect, you're probably very tuned in, because there wasn't anything that you talked about today in some of your cases that you mentioned that were not specific to me, including the shoulder. So I'm going to go do some work, I think. Everything you mentioned was just kind of right in there. So you were definitely in tune to me.
Oh, well, great. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, it's been a delight, and I really thank you for being here and sharing a lot of this information with us. I really believe, too, that as we, progress through the next few years, that the whole genealogy and spirit connection is really going to become more empowering for all of us. So I urge everybody, if they haven't started to do their genealogy, that they need to. In any event, Roger, how can people reach you if they want to?
It's just simply my name, RogerWalgerRunTogether.com. They can find my website.
Okay. And I'm Susan King, and you can find me at www.susaneking.com. Next week, it should be hilarious. It is going to be a very exciting show. We've got Summer McStravick and Venus Andrick, mother and daughter team. Probably well known through their association with Hay House Radio, now with Contact Talk Radio. And we're going to have some fun talks about flow dreaming, which is Summer's technique about getting us into the flow. And Venus is a riot with her mojo technique. And we should have a really fun show. So I hope you'll join us again. Roger, thank you. He came to us all the way from Paris. And we'll see you next week on Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect.
Good night, Susan.
Good night.